It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 438 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have a great interview with creator David Whalen, who has made such wonderful books as The Offspring and Evolution Utero, Volume 1. As he likes to call it, he's a one-man band on many of these books, doing the writing, the artwork, even the lettering and some coloring at times. So he's quite the force when it comes to creation of comic books. We talk about The Offspring and how the book came to be, as well as what the story is about. And then we delve into Evolution Utero, which is another creative and fascinating story. And we also talk about what he's got coming in the future. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. A word of warning, sometimes when we record we get some background noise, and we have that with this interview, so you might want to turn up the volume a little bit as you listen to the interview. But don't miss it, and don't let that distract you, because he's got a lot of great things to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show! It's great to welcome to the podcast David Whalen, the creator of such good things as The Offspring and another interesting book called Evolution Utero, which we'll talk a little bit about, which I got a chance to read. So how you doing, David?
Good. Thank you, Wayne. I appreciate you having me on.
It's good to talk with you. I'm interested because when I saw your name out on Comixology, which is where I got Evolution Utero from, it's described you as a teacher, a writer and an artist. And I was just sort of curious. I thought, is that the proper order to identify yourself?
That's the proper order that the money is made.
Oh, okay.
I'm an elementary school teacher. I've taught all levels, high school, middle school, elementary right now. I'm an elementary school teacher, and I have been for the last better part of a decade now. So I really have a great day job where I can draw with kids all day and then come home and hang out with my wife and kids and draw comic books for the rest of the day. It's a great gig.
That's cool because, you know, I'm sure it's different now with all the pandemic stuff happening. Are you teaching from home?
I am teaching from home, actually. I just finished live classes on our Google Meets that we've been doing. I've had two or three a day for the last probably month and a half, and it's really interesting with kindergartners, trying to get them to pay attention on a Google Meet, trying to draw with them when they're all at home and they could just be playing their video games or watching their cartoons or playing with their toys. So it's been a real interesting situation, but a real eye-opening and fun one, too, in some aspects.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good, because this is an odd time where we're all doing different things. I mean, you're at home, and I'm at home, and stuff like that, and occasionally our dogs interrupt, and so you never know what's going to happen when you're in a home situation. There's a DJ on the radio who is in the middle of doing his stuff. He'll call off to, "Don't touch that," he'll yell out. And I know he's talking to his daughter and stuff that. So we have to get used to those kinds of things. So let's dive in and start talking about your books. Now, the company I'm interested that prints your stuff is called Correct Handed Productions. Are you left-handed?
I am left-handed. Actually, I streamlined that probably about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, and I just made a Correct Handed Comics.
Oh, okay.
I started off with Correct Handed Productions because I do write novels also.
Oh.
And I have a novel, it's a Western called The Last Ride of Tyburn that I put out. Oh my gosh, it's been 5 years now since I've been done, and it's been on Amazon. But I realized that with creating comic books, I do have a second novel in the works, but it's been in the works for about 5 years.
Wow.
So I decided to streamline it to Correct Handed Comics just because that was my main priority. That's the main focus right now. So I'm making it really easy so there's no confusion about what we're putting out. So yes, I am left-handed. Yep.
Okay, because I used to work with a lady who was left-handed, and she used to have a sign that said, "Hire the left-handed. It's fun to watch them write." And it had a picture of the person trying to write like as if they were right-handed with their left hand.
so their hand's all the way around and they're trying to do that stuff. And I always get a kick out of that. Whenever I see left-handed, I always remember that because it's funny stuff.
The left-handed person is real.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. So let's dive into the Offspring because I'm really fascinated by it. You know, when I discovered you were a teacher, it kind of helped me understand a little bit about the story. Why don't you explain what the Offspring is to folks that have never seen it before?
Yeah, I came up with this story probably about 25 years ago. And really, the main focus was I wanted a story where I could change genres fairly easily. And I wanted a story that had characters that were more like the people that I knew. Growing up, I loved Batman, Superman, Captain America, Spider-Man, loved it all. But I wanted to create a story that had people that were going through struggles that friends that I knew, and some of the struggles that I was going through also. I did not want them to have costumes or code names. They all do have superpowers. The three main characters do have superpowers. And I always make the joke that I came up with the term no flights, no tights before mm-hmm. Smallville made it famous. And it was one of these things that I wanted to have these three characters meet them at their lowest possible point in their lives in while their lives were before that not great to begin with. So all three main characters were abused physically, mentally, emotionally in their homes, and they were sent to a alternative home. It's an orphanage, but I don't think those exist anymore, so I call them an alternative school. And it's in this school where there were other kids. These three main characters came to realize that they were bonded to each other. They were attracted to each other. They had a connection to each other. And as they grow, we kind of jump back and forth between them as 10 to 12-year-olds and then 20-year-olds in some of the later stories. I just put out issue 12. So I was able to be able to jump back and forth a little bit to give a little backstory on how they met and how they knew they were connected to each other. But these three main characters come to realize fairly quickly that they're connected to each other. So they realize through this bond that they are kind of like a catalyst to supernatural goings on. So the joke I make is that they're fighting demons inside and outside. So they start to realize that all these weird things that are happening to their town as the story progresses, that they are the reason these weird things are happening. And they try to deal with their own personal problems along with fighting these demons off.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the great things you do is at the beginning of, and you have two volumes of it. That's how I accessed them. I bought them through Amazon.
Thank you.
And yeah, and the thing that's interesting to me is that you have character bios at the beginning before things go. The first one is Will Sampson, who is all 4'2 in height. And, you know, age of 20 and super strength and nearly impenetrable skin. And he has an unexplained telepathic link with the other members of the clique, you call it. And I was kind of interested in that. I get a kick. His name is Will Sampson. And yet he's super strength and stuff like that. Of the three main characters, he does not have a nickname. Of course, with a name like Sampson, he probably doesn't need one.
That was my thought also. He is the one with the most, I would say, in the group, the one with the most common sense and willpower. So with his name being Will, I just kind of saw his name Will and his last name, obviously Samson, of being a nickname in and of itself. He is kind of like the unspoken leader of the group. He's the one that seemingly has it the most together. So I didn't really think that he was the kind to put up with nicknames or anything like that. So, and quite honestly, in the book, I rarely use their nicknames with each other. For me, the nicknames was kind of like a tool to be able to, for me to hone in on what their abilities were and for the reader to be able to get a better understanding, a pretty quick understanding of what their powers were.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things in his description that I found interesting was that he had a life-changing fall down a set of stairs when he was very young. The fall severely injured his spine and inexplicably stunted his growth, causing him to be short and stocky. And I thought that was interesting because, you know, normally, you know, superheroes are usually very tall and very slender. And it was interesting to have a character who is not like that.
Yeah, usually the things that these three main characters go through would just cause them physical or mental injury. And they do have physical and mental scars. But Will is definitely one of those characters that he reacts differently to almost every physical or mental thing that he comes across. He's super, super smart. So he's one of those characters that that I think really drives the story forward. And his fall, which I show later on in the book, I'll show all three of their backstories. In the book, The Fall, he doesn't even remember it. So it's one of those things that the other two characters will, Sarah and Vince do remember their trauma. They were right in the middle of it. They were way old enough to be able to remember why they were at that alternative school. But Will doesn't remember it. He just knows that it's something that happened to him. So that's something that I'm going to explore a little bit later on in the series.
Mm-hmm. So he's a very interesting character. You're right. He's a natural leader, it seems like. And he's also a teacher, if I remember correctly.
He is, yeah. He actually holds a few degrees. And he's genius level. That's kind of hard to write because I'm not genius level. But as we get in, like, actually issue 13 here that I'm working on today, actually, it's sitting right in front of me. I really wanted to show that genius level problem solving and critical thinking skills that Will has. You see it in one of his main storylines. You see it a little bit, but it hasn't really gotten, I've been able to branch out and be able to show it to the reader as much as I will in the next couple issues. He's clearly the most common sense of the three, though.
Mm-hmm. Now, another character, it's interesting that the two guys, the first and the lady, brings up she's the third one in the bios. Second one's called Vince, and he has a nickname named Backwater. And he's a hydrokinetic. Talk about, you know, who he is and his power.
Yeah, he growing up, he lived in squalor. He isn't the brightest bulb in the box, but he's got a good heart. He's one of those characters that growing up, he never got attention. So he craves that attention, and I think that's pretty clear in the first couple issues that he oftentimes craves that attention in inappropriate ways, and a lot of times dangerous ways also. He's definitely probably one of the characters that shows his mental scars as well as his physical scars from how he grew up. But his hydrokinesis was brought on because his mother, who was a drug addict, and didn't really pay much attention to him. Her favorite method of discipline was throwing hot water on him.
Mm.
So when he eventually got old enough to be able to kind of fight back, his mom went to scald him with hot water, and he, without even knowing it, stopped the water in midair and threw it back at his mom. Mm. So he comes to realize that he not only can control water, but can control the water and the fluids, the body fluids, inside of himself. And that shows in a funny, kind of gross way in one of the first fight scenes when all three of the characters are together. Will tries to get these bullies off of Sarah when Sarah's just trying to relax after she's just coming out of prison. And Will asks Vince to take care of one of these thugs that's all over Sarah. And he's not really a fighter. So his only recourse, the only thing he thought to do to get this person off of them was to throw up on him. And because he control his fluids in his body, he does it without even thinking about it and just grosses everybody out. So he's one of those characters that I think does things completely different than any other character I've ever seen in comic books because of his lack of self-control.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. You're really a different character. Like, these characters are so unique. I mean, I have not seen anything like them.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
it. It's really something. Now, the third one, of course, is Sarah, and she has a nickname called Disarm. She's 19, and according to the book, she's a high-level telekinetic. So talk about her and her powers.
Yeah, she's one of the ones that is definitely a character that does not show her feelings. She keeps everything really close to the vest. She's not one to, even with Will and Vince, who are probably two of her closest friends or she has that connection with, she oftentimes shows Vince that she does not care for him, even though she does care for him. It's kind of like pushing him away, just like she pushes everybody else away in her life. her and Will have a little bit of a different situation because she trusts Will 100%, and that shows through some of the storylines throughout Volume 1, 2, and in this next volume that I'm working on right now. But yeah, Sarah was mentally, physically, sexually abused as a young girl, and we open up the story on her running from her, come to find out later on, it's her father, who is physically and mentally abusing her. And she, just like Vince, starts to control water without realizing it. She goes to her safe place in her mind. And before anything can happen, she opens her eyes back up again, and she has essentially disarmed her father from being able to molest her, being able to physically abuse her anymore. And I won't say exactly what it is because I think it's a pretty bold visual. And I like it when people see it because they go, what just happened? And they're trying to put it together in their brains, what they're actually looking at. And then it starts to come to them and they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that just happened, that she just did that. So Disarm, her nickname is kind of a play on words because she creates force fields that she can push people. She can move things. She can blow things up if she needs to. But it's also a way for her to be able to keep herself separated from everybody else around her, which is really right now all she wants. Even with these other two characters, Will and Vince, that are clearly connected to her in more than just that they were all abused.
Because, again, I have to say, these characters are very unique, very different, unlike anything I've seen before, which is great. You know, because they're in a school situation, and they have a lady that's in charge by name of Mrs. Blake. And, of course, I'm reminded of the X-Men and their setup and things. But this is so different than that. That I was impressed to see something that was different and unique and something I hadn't read before. I never read a lot of comics in my time. So I think it was really quite the accomplishment to come up with, even though there's some familiarity to it, there's a lot of unique things going on.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yeah, when I came up with the concept and the idea for the book, it was one of those things where I wanted to start with a premise that was strong but could also be adjustable as I went. And I think this is, like I said, I'm working on issue 13 right now, and it's starting to get nuts. It's starting to get exactly what I wanted the book to be from start to finish, exactly where I wanted the book to go, and just coming up with different ideas to be able to play off of these characters. Even though I know the story and I have the story till the end, it just keeps getting better and better for me, even as the writer, going, oh my gosh, that's exactly what I want to do with this character. To be able to get it on the pages is very rewarding, and I love it, and I appreciate your kind words.
Yeah, I'm interested, too, because the bad guys are interesting as well. The first volume has, I think, a guy who will do anything to become immortal, is how he's described. He has, like, a cult. And, of course, like all good cult leaders, he's being manipulated, or seems to be. And things are, boy, they're really quite dark, I have to say, when things are going. So it's interesting because the other, you know, this book is very much, you know, comics tend to be very light in their perspective. To see something that's this dark and this different, you know, it was kind of an interesting experience for me. So I really thought that was something, you know, the cult, and we've seen cults before, of course, you know, you have all kinds of cults in Marvel and stuff like that. But these guys are very unique. And of course, I have to say, when the guy is saying, when he's telling all these kids and stuff, and he's kidnapping children, and there's a reason why, and of course, I won't go into that here because I want people to read the book, but let's just say that I was surprised to see the reason why. I was shocked to see that because it was really something different. And I thought the way that the three offspring handled that, I don't know, is that like a group name, the offspring? Is that something they'll come up with eventually?
It's actually, there's a twist to it, and I am just getting to the twist now. It's something that I wanted to kind of fester and have kind of bubbling up in the first 13 issues, which I'm kind of calling season one. And now in issues 11, 12, and 13, that starts to get explained a little bit why the book is called The Offspring. And it might not be exactly what people think it is.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, the second volume, I get a kick. There's a thing that says, the subtitle says, Action, Adventure, Creatures, and Chaos. It says in there, and we get into, again, you have a bio for a character that I kind of get a kick out of. His name is Ruminant, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And I got a kick because he's got like horns on his head. Well, it's like ram horns. It's not like devil horns. And they encounter this guy in a fighting situation. And more than that, I don't want to say because I don't want to spoil what's going on in the story. But you get to see a lot more about Will in the second volume, which I really liked. We get to explore his character quite a bit more. And I really enjoyed that because his character is really, really interesting. I'm just fascinated. At 20-year-old, he seems so much more mature than other people.
Yeah, that was definitely my plan with Will. As the series goes on, like the end of book four, you start to see like little cracks, little problems, maybe a little problem seeping through in Will's psyche. But to definitely in his story arc, his two-issue story arc, where he fights Ruminant, it definitely starts to seep through a little bit more. You start to see a little bit more of his unsureness, of his little areas where he lacks that self-confidence. Every other area in his life, he projects that confidence. But that was definitely one thing that I wanted to show with Will, that maybe he doesn't quite have it as together as he projects that he does or people think that he does. And for me, that showing Vince and Sarah, who do not have it together, and they will admit it right out, they do not have it together, but showing Will, who is a character that does seem to have it all under control, where there are little aspects in his life where the thread, you pull on one little thread and it starts to kind of unravel a little bit, I really just think it makes his character even better and gives him a little bit more depth to what we saw in the first four issues of the book.
Mm-hmm. Now, the second volume is 5 issues. Mm-hmm. In it, and it comes to a kind of a interesting conclusion in that we were starting to figure out what's going on behind the scenes, and I will not in any way spoil it, but I was fascinated by it. There's some interesting things going on. There's interesting things about religious characters, and you know, I always think religion is a real danger if it's not done right. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really interesting the way that you handled that you show, as well as you're dealing with the dark side of other stuff, you deal with the dark side of religion.
Yeah,
in there, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, it's tough, and I definitely wanted to make sure that I wasn't bad mouthing any religions, mm-hmm. but showing that even good people can make mistakes, or in this case, it's not the religion that's making a mistake. It's the individual person. And it does kind of have touchy subjects in it. But I think being just as honest as you can about it, especially in a story like Sarah's story, that is clearly a story about our differences and how we think about ourselves and the universe. And those religious differences are there. For me, it's about talking about those issues that make people uncomfortable. So having those two characters who could not be more difficult or more different than each other, butting heads, for me is kind of like my analogy of, yeah, we're different, but let's talk about it. And clearly in the story, it goes completely wrong. But hopefully it's that conversation in the real world that would not go wrong. And being able to show the religion aspect, showing good people and on both sides also, and then bad choices on both sides also.
Mm-hmm. Now, another interesting character that comes in the second volume is a youngster by the name of Caleb, who has difficulty with other people, shall we say, adjusting socially and stuff.
And that's the way to say it, yes.
Yes, because I always try to make it so that I don't spoil, because I want people to be able to read the story and get his storyline is interesting. You have started the storyline, but by the end of volume two, it's not complete yet.
It's not complete,
which I found really interesting.
Yeah, for volume two, which is issues 5 through 10, all the storylines they come to an end. but it's not an end. It's open, open-ended for a good reason, because issues 11, 12, and 13 bring all three of those main villains back to be able to teach or have the offspring of the clique grow in different ways. So it's bringing those three characters back to really wrap up those storylines, to really wrap up those three characters, to find out what happens to them in the end. But I'm trying to go through the method of if I have a good villain or I have a good character, I don't want to kill them off. I want them to be able to come back. The first villain from issues one through four, the first, the cult leader, Silas Cherry Street, I have plans to bring him back to be able to kind of get his revenge, probably issue 40, issue 41, somewhere in there. So the idea of these characters coming back after their storylines were the storylines with the clique was wrapped up, but the storylines with the villains were not. So showing how they come into the story and how they're really used by those godlike creatures that kind of flow in and out of the story without any real explanation, all those questions get answered in 11, 12, and 13.
Okay. This is what. So, well, of course, I've got to ask, I got the volumes 1 and 2 through Amazon. How do we get the individual issues, or you know, how do you make them available to people? I mean, is Amazon the main way to get them?
Yeah, right now I'm looking at some other outlets, but Amazon seems to be working pretty well for me, and you can get individual issues. Like I said, I just put out issue 12 of The Offspring a month and a half ago, there is an author page. If you just on Amazon, Google my name, Waylon, and the Offspring, all of them will pop right up. So that's right now. And if you go to my website, correcthandedcomics.com, it has links to every single book that I've ever created in the history of time. So that's probably the easiest way to be able to get to it is to go to the website, correcthandedcomics.com, and there's links for everything.
Now, but I want to transition into the other book. But before I do that, something really interesting about this whole process to me is that it says that the Offspring is created, written, penciled, inked, lettered, and colored. Issues 6 to 10 and other ones are colored by you. So you basically do the whole thing.
I mean, one-man band.
Yep. Yeah, because I'm always interested. The reason why I asked that at the beginning about artist, writer and artist and stuff like that, because I always want to ask people who do both, are you a writer that draws or an artist that writes? That's what I was curious to find out, because I'm always interested in that, because the creative process always fascinates me. Mm-hmm. And I'm always intrigued. I mean, do you do this on the computer?
Most of the line work, pencils and inks, are done traditionally with pencils and pens on regular piece of paper, and I shrink it down and scan it in and clean it up in the computer, and then the colors are done, the colors and letters are done digitally. So it's a whole big process, one that I'm just probably be fine-tuning till the end of my life. But yeah, it's kind of a process of both traditional and then digital.
Because you bring in some folks to help you color on occasion.
Yeah, I do. Issue 1 and I believe issue 3. I was lucky enough to have two great colorists come in and be able to really help me. Really helped me actually with the tone of the book and how I wanted to be able to view these characters and the where to put in dark, where to put in light, where to make it brighter, where to tone it down a little bit, and just let kind of the story flow without the lightness or the darkness getting in the way. I was really lucky enough to have those two colorists come in and help me out on issues 1 and 3, but for issues 2 and then 5 and beyond, it's a bit on me.
Wow. I mean, you know, I don't know many people in the industry that can do this many, or wear this many hats, maybe the best way to say it. I mean, did you start out drawing and then took on these other things, or how did you get to the place we can do all these different things?
Yeah, I definitely started out drawing like some of the artists in my position. I've been drawing since I popped out of the womb, and kept on drawing and drawing and drawing. And as I kind of realized that I wanted to create comic books in the area I grew up in, there weren't a lot of people like me that wanted to create comic books. So as I got a little older and tried to go to conventions and try to talk to people in the industry and artists and writers, the one big thing I kept hearing from everybody was, well, if you're in a situation where you draw but you don't have any writers around you, then you better learn how to write. And I took that to heart. And from then on, I think the next week I came up with a concept for the Offspring. Let's say it was 25 years ago. And it really took hold on me. And as I grew and as I got my, you know, my bachelor's and then my master's for teaching and started teaching, I got to a point where I knew that the stories that I wanted to tell, I was ready to tell them. I was ready to be able to get those characters and get those action scenes and get that characterization on the page the way that I wanted to do it, and the story that I wanted to tell. So that's one of the reasons why I've probably about 5 or 6 years ago now. I started getting in with some really, really small press books. Started to just kind of get some feelers out to do some 6-page fillers in here and an issue there for some small, really small press books. And came to realize that I was ready to just do it on my own, ready to tell these stories on my own. So that's when I started Correct Hand of Comics and started just getting out as much content as I possibly could. Quick but quality is what I like to say. Quick but quality.
Mm-hmm. Wow, it's impressive to be able to do all those different things. It's just wild. I you know, because so many people choose one thing or another. I mean, there are some writers who draw, but it's better that they don't. And some artists who write, and sometimes I think it'd be better if they stuck to the artwork. But it's great that you can do all these different things.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely continues to be a learning experience. Learning and growing and changing and getting better, continuous improvement of my craft is something that is just a daily basis where I'll go, why don't I try this and it doesn't work, or why don't I try that and it works great, and say, oh, awesome, that's exactly what I wanted to happen. Or a page comes down and I'm like, this is not turning out the way I want it to turn out, so I'll kind of backtrack a little bit and come at it a different way. It's definitely a learning process, and I would say that the coloring aspect is the one that is the most challenging for me, challenging in a good way, because it really helps to be able, like I said, create that tone of that double book.
It's really fascinating. That's how I got into podcasting. I started talking with somebody who was doing a podcast. I was fascinated by the whole process, and I decided I wanted to learn the whole thing. And so I began to do learn the process of it, and I started to find the ways that I thought would work the best. And, you know, I that's the way I was. I wanted to do everything. I didn't want to have anybody else do anything. I wanted to pick it all up myself and do it. So that's how I got started on it. I've been doing it now about 8-9 years. So it's just something about that. So now I have to tell you, we got to get to the book that is really creative and really different. And that's Evolution Utero, Volume 1, The Conception. Talk about that, or what the concept is for that book, if you would.
Yeah, it's probably the closest thing I have out now to a traditional superhero book, but it's not really a traditional superhero book. But the idea that I had was, if you meet someone who is the worst kind of person that you've ever met, somebody who is super selfish, somebody who doesn't care about other people, somebody that has no drive and no ambition, no goal to be able to do anything or make themselves any better, that's essentially the main character of this book, Sarah Inaba. And she is the kind of person that you, like when you first meet them, you're like, oh, she's okay. And then you get to know them, like, oh, she's not okay. She is selfish and mean and only cares about herself and maybe even the small group of friends that she has around her. But still, it doesn't really show that she cares about those people. Well, I thought, what would happen, and I came up with a concept probably about 3 months after I became a father for the first time, 14 years ago. What would happen if this kind of person got pregnant and was about to become a mother? And then what would happen if this baby that's growing inside of her developed superhuman abilities? Mm-hmm. And how would that physically and emotionally affect her? Would it change her in a positive way? Or would it send her down a path of even more selfishness because she can do, because of this superpowered baby that's growing inside of her, it develops superpowers in her also. does she use those powers for good or does she use those powers for evil? Come to find out that the baby kind of takes control and kind of changes her as it goes, often her making her do things that she does not want to do, but does them anyway because she feels empowered to be able to do positive things instead of negative things, and if she sticks on that road of positive things or not.
Yeah, the thing that amazed me the most, you know, normally pretty quick in the process, somebody they have the child and the child goes on and they have to, you know, after the birth process, then the relationship is different. In your book, while the child is in the womb, the child can do things, and sometimes, I mean, it looks like they through the womb are doing things and being seen doing superpowered stuff, which I have to say that startled me when I saw it for the first time.
Oh, good.
I'd never seen that before, and I was just like, whoa, look at this. This is something I, you know, because I've been reading comics for a long time, and this is something I have never, ever seen before. So I was just like, wow. So I mean, where did the concept come from that? Because normally in comics, people don't go down that road. Yeah. What made you want to go down that road?
Joe, like I said, when I kind of came up with the concept, I've been reading comics books for a long time also. I've never kind of seen that idea of the idea of, you hear it all the time in comics, this person was born to be a hero. This person was born to be this thing, whatever it is, born to be a villain, born to be a hero, born to be super, whatever it is. Then I thought, what if they start showing it before they're born? What if you get an indication of who this child is going to be before they are born? And how would you display that? How could you visually show that? And what would happen to the mother if this child started to want to be a hero before, or want to do these positive things or these superhuman things before it was even born? Mm-hmm. And it was a long time of trying to really figure out how visually to show that, how, when to show it and when not to show it, how to introduce it, which I think I introduced it in a pretty good way, a pretty startling way, and then how to be able to pull back a little bit and have it be Sarah's story more than the baby inside of her story. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Well, yes, it makes perfect sense. The thing that I another thing that got me about this book, and there's four issues of it out, and I read all four of them, and I was surprised how you ended the fourth issue, shall we say. You ended it in a way that normally comics don't end up things again. Now, if you want to read something unexpected, read your stuff, because I am always surprised, and that's a big thing for me. If you can surprise me, boy, that is something unique in my experience.
Thank you. Kind of turn it on its head a little bit.
Oh, man, when you get to the end of the fourth issue, I don't dare spoil it, but all I can say was it was not what I thought was going to happen.
Yeah. Again, thank you. That's exactly what I was going for, so I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we get to see that, well, things might not always turn out the way we expect is the only way I can say it, because
with Sarah, she had been making bad decisions her whole life. How quickly does that change for a person? Even if they want to do better or are provoked to do better, in stressful situations, do they really do better? Do they really make, does someone change that quickly? And in Sarah's case, like I said, I don't want to spoil it, but in Sarah's case, and she proves harder to change than the story implies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Now talk about the bad guy in this too. Can you talk about him without spoiling too much?
I think so, yeah. He doesn't really show up very quickly. This is one of those things where there's a lot of action, a lot of characterization throughout the book, but the bad guy really doesn't show up until issue four. issue three, end of issue three, beginning of issue four, and then he takes center stage issue four. And it's, yeah, how can I say it without giving it away? It's a time travel element where Sarah is confronted with her choices, for good or bad, and the bad guy is there kind of stop her from making the choice that she makes that ultimately affects the future in such a way that he cannot control the world, and he wants to control the world. Grandiose is the name of the villain. I really, when I came up with that name, I was very pleased with myself. I really liked the name Grandiose, and it's very Aztec inspired, very South American Aztec inspired villain. For reasons that become apparent in issue three and issue four, when you start to see the world that they come from, and she is confronted with not only choices that she made, but also confronted with what her future might be also.
It's wild. Of course, now I got to know at this point, you know, you talked about the fact that you're still working on The Offspring. Are you still working on this book as well?
This was kind of like, I wanted to end it like Back to the Future ended. Does that make sense? Like the story is like there, it wraps it up, but it also, could connect to part two and part three in the first four miniseries. She doesn't even have the baby, which I thought was a good way to be able to end it, where people thought, oh, at the end of this book, she's going to have a brand new baby. Nope, not yet. So it definitely lends itself to the next volume, which I plan on getting to probably in the next year and a half or so. And quite honestly, I don't think in the next volume she's going to have the baby in that volume either, because I have a very, very specific plan for her and how I want her to be able to eventually have the baby. I kind of saw it as, this might sound weird, but I kind of saw it as rounding the bases of baseball. So the first four issue miniseries is getting to first base. The second one is getting to second base. Then third base is when she's actually going to have the baby. And then the home run is when it really does. She changes her life and that baby's life and everybody's life around her for the better. So I do have a plan for the next volume two, volume three, and volume four. It's just, like I said, I'm a one-man band, so it's going to take me a while to get there.
That's what I'm saying. If you're doing everything like you are, I mean, that's going to take a while for you to get all that done. So it'll be good. Gosh, now, of course, I want to know what's going to happen. So I'm going to have to keep tracking it, which leads me to a good question. If we want to follow your stuff and keep up with your developments as they come, what's the best way to do that?
I do most stuff on Facebook. So at Correct Handed Comics on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter also at Handed Correct. And I have a separate page for The Offspring. So at The Offspring 00, they have their separate page. And I do some different things on each Twitter, Facebook account to be able to show some of the behind the scenes stuff, some of the process to be able to create some of these books. And on Instagram also, it's david.whalen.1614. So lots of different avenues to find me, and all of them have links to my website, correcthandedcomics.com, which has, like I said, links to every comic I've ever created. It's got links to my novel, my Western, The Last Ride to Tiber. It has previews, it has bios, my bio, it has upcoming stuff, it has a whole bunch of stuff. So check it out.
Well, I have to say, there's a funny little saying that goes right next to the logo. It says, "Don't get left out," which is very witty, I thought. Now, I've got to ask one more thing, too. Well, maybe this will answer the question if I ask it this way. Do you have other projects that you're working on that we should be aware of?
Yes, I have a one-shot. In between doing The Offspring, I had so many other different stories that aren't four-issue miniseries. They're not 100, you know, plus page graphic novels. They're not ongoing series. So in between some of the issues of The Offspring, I'm going to start putting out some one-shots. And the first one-shot came out in January. It's a 24-page black-and-white noir thriller. I'm a big fan of noir thrillers of the 30s and 40s and Alfred Hitchcock-type storytelling, and it's called Shady Lady, and it's about no superhero powers, no anything like that. It's a very much a down to earth action thriller about a female lead who is dealing with her own mental and physical issues, living in New York City, and how she kind of navigates through some of the stuff that's happening in society today. How a person who is 100% a leader, 100% someone who takes charge of a situation, 100% somebody who is going to step up to be able to help people who need help, is the main character. And it kind of shows how this main character kind of goes through some of the weird things we've got going in our society today.
Well, I got to ask you, because at the end of the second volume, there's a full page ad for a book called I Won't Stop. Is that another book you're doing?
That's another book. And that's probably the closest thing I have to a traditional superhero book coming out here. My plan is to get that one out by August. I haven't really put a date on it yet because I'm crossing my fingers for August, but it might be a little bit later. But it's not a traditional superhero story. It's got the cape, he's got the boots, he's got the costume. But it really is, I think, more of a look into the mental and physical breakdown of a Superman type character after he goes through the most traumatic event that I could come up with in my deranged brain that any person could deal with. So how does any normal person deal with this tragic event, let alone how does a superhero deal with it? And it's how it affects him mentally and physically, how it affects the other superheroes around him. It's kind of like a Justice League type, archetype type characters that try to help him, and how it affects just the normal average person if this Superman type character went a little nutty. Not in a villainous way, but in a psychological way. Try not to give too much away about that one because I really like that.
Yeah.
I want to wait until I have it all. I've got it all figured. It's all thumbnailed. I know exactly what's going to happen with it, and how it's going to end. And I think the ending again will kind of take people aback.
Good. Well, I know I'm going to get something different when I get one of your books, so I'm looking forward to that one. Last thing I'm curious about is I noticed in all your books you have a certain question that you list in there. I think maybe being a teacher that has something to do with it. It says, where is your safe space? Is that something for us to, you know, to kind of deal with reality, especially now in this current pandemic stuff that we've been going through? That's kind of an interesting question to ask. Is that the teacher in you kind of trying to reach out to people and kind of helping us cope with some stuff?
I think so. It definitely has to deal with the three main characters of The Offspring that have had to deal with some pretty messed up stuff that no human being should ever really have to deal with in their life. If people were to act the way people should act, if people were to just be cool. But it's definitely a phrase, where's your safe place, is a phrase that I'm going to continue to use throughout the series. I don't actually say it in the books, but it's coming up. So it's one of those things where it is a, where is your mental safe place? Where do you go to feel safe? Where do you go to be the person that you want to be without judgy eyes, or without self-consciousness, or without being self-conscious about people judging you? And these three main characters definitely are not in their safe place right now at the beginning of the book. So as we move through the story, they'll definitely start to see where their safe place is, and I'll start to kind of bring that tagline home a little bit for these three characters. And actually, eventually going to be four main characters. I touch on that in issues 11, 12, and 13. If you notice in Will's story line, his two-story arc, there was kind of like a ghost figure presence that was trying to get a hold of him, and I kind of dropped it because it wasn't ready to be part of the story yet. In issue 11, 12, and 13, it starts to become part of the story big time.
Cool. Kind of I like foreshadowing.
To into Will's story and then pulled back again.
Cool. Well, I like foreshadowing. Like I was going to say that's nice. It gives me a sense you know where you're going, and it's like driving a car. If you can get in a car and wander around, but if you get into a car and you're going someplace, it feels much more like you're accomplishing something.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I've
definitely got the end. I'm looking for 100 issues. Mm-hmm. But I know exactly where it's going. I've got it all plotted out. I think it's going to be great.
Are you going to ever cross over these guys?
I've got some, you know, it's funny. I've got some storylines that I came up with that I actually had to pull out of the main series because I didn't quite have a place for them organically to go into the tradition, the transition of one storyline to the next storyline, especially coming up here for issues 13, 14, 15. Because it's like I said, I'm going to start to do some different genre bending, and the kind of horror theme that they have is kind of turning into a sci-fi theme, and the sci-fi theme is going to turn into time travel, and the time travel is going to turn back into horror. So it's going to kind of be an ebb and flow of really dark, then kind of more sci-fi, and then get back into. But it's definitely something that I've been thinking about doing with some of these storylines that I had to pull out of the main 100 issues, maybe as a trade paperback or something, just kind of this is another story that happened to them kind of thing. Because I have one 3-issue storyline that I came up with. I love the villain. The villain is not your normal villain, and the way that she interacts with these 3 main characters I think is just hilarious, and it gives a little bit more insight to Will, Vince and Sarah's background, where they were right before we meet them. So I'm probably going to get that 3-issue story arc out sometimes in trade paperback.
Goodness, you're a busy guy.
I'm trying.
Full-time job in the daytime as well as doing all these things and raising a family. Wow. Wow. Well, we'll have to be patient, I think, at times. And just be, it's worth the wait. So I think we'll be enjoying it. So David, I mean, keep up the wonderful stuff. It's going to be great to see what else you have in mind, because I'm a creative guy like you, I'm sure has lots of irons that you want to put in the fire. So I think we'll have to stay tuned and see what you're going to be up to.
Thank you, Ryan. I really appreciate that.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but it's a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.